It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Projects to support rural communities and tribal nations in Wisconsin get a funding boost through the Wisconsin Rural Partnership Initiative. We learn about one program called the Rural Livability Project and what it could do for sparsely populated areas of Wisconsin. As we discuss rural issues, call in with a question, share your perspective, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tessa Conroy is an associate professor at UW-Madison and economic development specialist. Tessa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. The Rural Livability Project you lead was recently awarded federal funding. What will this funding allow you to do?
With the Rural Livability Project, we are wanting to identify the factors, or rather the system of factors, that contribute to long-term livability, or what sustains rural communities over time. We were motivated by seeing challenges that rural communities are facing, particularly in terms of losing critical institutions. So we look at rural communities, oftentimes there's the loss of a major employer, maybe they lose a healthcare provider or a clinic, then goes the pharmacy, then maybe a grocery store. And it's kind of this death by a thousand cuts that happens over time. And it makes it harder and harder for people to meet their needs on a routine basis and stay in these communities. They become less and less livable.
Kind of chain reaction that you see in these sparsely populated areas.
That's what we're interested in better understanding, kind of what happens first, what's the order of events, is there a way to prioritize certain features of the community that can sustain it in the long run, because we know it's not happening everywhere. Some rural communities are doing really well. So can we study those places that are doing well, that are thriving, that have sustained themselves, and figure out, like, what's the recipe or what's the blueprint for their success?
Have rural areas always faced problems like these? Have they always had this type of chain reaction, especially when a major employer goes dark?
You know, when we look at least the last several decades, I think the challenges for rural areas have certainly been mounting. I expect that, you know, going back over time, we will always find rural residents in rural places that have struggled. But it does seem to be the case that we've become more alert to the challenges, at least in the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years.
Let's take a call now. Dave is joining us from Toma. Dave, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, I want to know why we have to make these places thrive or sustain them, because Wisconsin's a rural state and people like it that way. And invading the rural community more is just the opposite of what we need today with climate change and things.
Dave, thank you for calling in. Tessa, what do you make of that perspective?
Yeah, I think that he makes a good point. I think that what I hear is this equating of rural success with growth, and that's not necessarily what we're talking about with this project. I think it's quite possible that rural communities can do well through stability, that it's not necessarily about economic growth, about adding people. The recipe for success in some places might be, you know, sustained population and, you know, a certain consistency over time.
Rural is a term that may mean different things to different people. How does your project determine a rural area?
Right. That's a fairly complicated question. So even when we look at, like, the federal level, there are about 10 or so working definitions of how we could define rural areas. We're certainly alert to those, and we'll probably be using multiple definitions of rural, looking for robustness across these different ways of measuring rural. But we want to be paying attention to also how communities see themselves. That's maybe what's most important, is does a place identify itself as a rural community? And if so, how can we engage with them to help them meet their goals?
In terms of Census Bureau data, what do you see there in you know, classifying an area as rural?
Yeah, so the census system for rurality is interesting. So the definition changes about every 10 years. The Office of Management and Budget is going to update what we call urban and rural every 10 years or so. And that's typically based on population and distance to a metro area. But what it means in practice is that rural places that grow or get bigger, that add population, are going to sort of graduate or move up into the metro category. So what's left over time is that these rural places, and again, I don't consider growth to be synonymous with success, but the rural places that grow are going to move into metro. So it looks like metro areas are always doing really well. And then what's left in the rural category is sometimes those places that have been stable or even declining. So it always kind of looks like rural is lagging behind metro. And I think that's really important to understand about the way these definitions work.
Tessa Conroy with us, associate professor and an economic development specialist at UW-Madison, as we look at efforts to make a rural area more livable and stable. You can join in with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tessa, last year, the U.S. Census Bureau changing its classification for rural, and previously places with more than 2,500 people were urban. Now the threshold is 5,000 people. And we talked with Jerry Deshane, who leads the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. He told us in January that many places in Wisconsin could suffer from this change.
When a company is looking to relocate to an area, they only look at what are called metropolitan service areas. And those are not rural areas. Those are urban areas. And in Wisconsin, we've just taken 40 cities and villages off that list.
So how much does the federal government's classifications affect economic development or funding opportunities?
Yeah, I think those limitations and challenges are real for those communities experiencing a change. You know, it can affect, as we heard, what lists they show up on, and so who's getting to see them, perhaps in terms of business location, perhaps in terms of, you know, grant applications and the funding that's available to them. So I certainly think when we look kind of community by community, we should expect to see some places that are frustrated by this change because it is going to impact their opportunities.
As you move into the Rural Livability Project, what research, what data, what figures support your research, and what do you know so far that will inform how you carry out this project?
Yeah, so, you know, we're starting from the beginning, from a simple place of just a working definition of what is livability, and we expect that it's those places where people can enjoy what they appreciate and meet their needs on a routine basis. And it's a simple definition, but it lets us use a data-driven approach to identify livable communities. We think that the data will help us find the livable communities because human behavior will tell us where they are. So we're looking for places, for example, that have perhaps high in-migration because people are going to want to live there. That's a signal of livability. They might have low out-migration, a signal that people want to stay because they like living there. We might expect that people want to start businesses there. So we would look at startup activity. We might also expect housing values to appreciate. We might expect that these are places where people want to have families, so we can look at fertility rates. These are all indicators that a place is livable. No one indicator is going to completely tell us the story. So we're looking at combining factors, looking at what people's choices are telling us, and using this combination to identify livability. From there, we can start to think about different types of livable communities. We don't expect that they're all the same. And then we'll look at those different types and think about what are the key characteristics that are feeding into livability. So in one community or type, it might be that tourism, maybe a slightly older demographic, maybe rich cultural amenities are really part of their recipe for long-term livability. But in another type of community, it might be that a great school system and a demographic that skews towards families and parks and has critical institutions like great clinics and healthcare, that's their recipe for long-term livability. So we want to identify these types and then look for the critical institutions and features of those communities that feed into that long-term success.
One indicator you didn't bring up, and something is something that we often, I think, look to, is whether a downtown area is thriving, you know, or like a little central business district. Are there businesses there? Do you look at that and whether a downtown seems like it's doing well or not? And does that play into it?
Yes, we actually have a downtown specialist on our project. We do expect that that's part of the recipe, at least in some places, right? That downtown is a place for businesses. So having a strong business community, people wanting to own and operate a business in that community is great. It helps community members meet their needs. They can go shopping, they can find the services and products that they're looking for. But downtown also serves as a gathering place, and it can be a center for culture and arts as well. So downtown is certainly part of the fabric of livability we expect in a lot of places.
You mentioned rural tourism, and I wonder, could rural tourism help these communities?
I think in some places it's definitely going to be part of their strategy for long-term success, that people are always going to want to visit, you know, beautiful high amenity places, and that finding ways to fold that into an economic development strategy, because it can fluctuate, it can be seasonal. So there are some maybe limitations, but I certainly think that understanding that aspect of your community and how to make it part of your success will be important in some places.
With a locality's economic development strategies, do you think our government's creating disadvantages for rural areas when it comes to development and wanting to guide businesses toward metro areas?
You know, I think it, you know, varies from place to place, and the role of government and local government varies. I think some places are more engaged than others. And certainly there are businesses that want to be in rural areas because the business owner likes the amenities. They want to live in a particular community, and it's their preferences that are going to drive where the business locates. Certainly there are, you know, maybe bigger corporations that have a more complex system for making a decision about where they're going to locate. But I think a lot of small businesses, it's about where does the owner, where do the employees want to live? And that's where the business locates.
UW-Madison Economic Development Specialist Tessa Conroy has this new project underway to help solve unique challenges occurring in Wisconsin's rural communities. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question, add comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new project underway at UW-Madison examines the key assets needed to sustain rural communities and support the quality of life in sparsely populated parts of Wisconsin. You can join the discussion at any point, calling in with a question or a concern. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tessa Conroy is here, Associate Professor of Agriculture and Applied Economics at UW-Madison, where she heads up the Rural Livability Project. Tessa, it's called, of course, Brain Drain, Remaining a Concern in Wisconsin Communities, referring to when young people move away from rural areas to jobs in the cities. How much of an issue is brain drain in Wisconsin?
I think it's a concern in some places, in some rural communities. They tend to be very worried about, especially the kind of young adults leaving their community. When we engage with those communities, we try to think about the bigger picture. So in some instances, we might actually want young adults to leave the community for a while. Maybe they go get skills or training that they can't get locally. Maybe they move, find a partner, start a family. And then when they're ready to kind of buy a home, think about a long-term place to live, we talk about boomerang migration, that this would be the time that they want to come back to the community. So we try to help them think about what are the features of your community that are going to make these people want to come back and live here when they're ready and reach that stage of life.
Thinking about so many folks working remotely and the efforts to spread broadband across Wisconsin, especially in rural areas, when you talk about that scenario of moving back later in life, after establishing, a career, what impact does broadband have?
I think broadband and the potential for expansion in Wisconsin presents a real opportunity for a lot of communities because people are less anchored to their places of work. So we have more ability to live where we want to live based on our preferences. And so again, it comes back to what makes your community preferable to these people who can work remotely potentially. So broadband is certainly part of the equation, but they're probably not just looking for broadband. As we talked about earlier in the show, a nice downtown might be really valuable to some people. They might be looking for those critical institutions. Can they meet their needs on a regular basis, whether it's the pharmacy, the grocery store? Natural amenities are always, you know, important. They enter into the equation for a lot of people. They want to live someplace that maybe has nice weather or nice views or lakefront or, you know, all of these different types of elements of a place that are going to make a person want to choose that community.
The Wisconsin Policy Forum is reporting that our state's rural communities are growing faster in population than most other Midwestern states. Is rural Wisconsin bucking trends that are hurting rural areas in other states?
Yeah, certainly a lot of places in Wisconsin are doing really well. And I think that's part of the motivation for our project is we want to understand those places that are doing well by different metrics. You know, I don't consider growth the only way to measure thriving or success, but it is one metric. And there are places in Wisconsin, a lot of them doing really well. But we still also do have places that are facing population decline. On average, though, we are seeing this increase based on that recent data.
Will the Rural Livability Project look into the effects of climate change on rural areas, you know, especially as farming communities, you know, face droughts and other weather disasters or people want, you know, migration of people from areas that are extremely affected? How will you examine climate change in this?
I expect that that will show up in multiple ways throughout the project. I think climate is starting to affect people's choices of place to live. It's a stronger factor, I think, as you mentioned, how it's shaping industry, particularly farming, is going to change economic opportunities in places. I think the way climate is kind of weaves throughout all of the elements of the community is going to show up in the Rural Livability Project.
Will you do first-person interviews? What type of information will you be gathering from communities and from individuals?
Yeah, so those of us on the project are primarily with UW Extension. So we're often out in communities having conversations about the challenges that they're facing. We're also learning about success strategies and what's working well for places. Helping them understand, you know, the kind of menu or range of economic development strategies and what might be most appropriate for their particular region, and just trying to have really informed discussions about how to move forward with their local goals. And so I would say that that's integrated all throughout the project, that we're just constantly in a two-way conversation with the communities that we'd like to serve.
We're discussing efforts to make a rural area more livable and stable. Tessa Conroy with us, associate professor and an economic development specialist who is leading the Rural Livability Project at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions and share your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tessa, what is the timeline for the Rural Livability Project? When do you find benchmarks along the process?
So our project officially starts September 1st. So we're already up and running and kind of getting the talented people that we'd like to have on the project working with us. We're hopeful that over the coming year, we'll engage with some communities and have those conversations that can be steering and guiding for us. The project lasts officially about 3.5 years, but we're hopeful that in a year, year and a half, by the end of 3 years, that we're sharing this information back with communities and we have some helpful and useful strategy and policy information that can be of service to rural areas.
In your study, looking at how really key institutions, pillars in a community, have a role in the health of it, how does the presence or lack of a bank, say, or a grocery store or a pharmacy, how does it affect the strength of a rural community?
Yeah, I think this comes down to, again, that ability to meet your needs on a routine basis. Oftentimes traveling further for a grocery store or for a healthcare provider in a rural area. And that can add up all of those inconveniences. And maybe pretty soon people start thinking, well, I'll just live in the next town over. With regard to banking, the implications of losing a community bank can kind of even ripple through the business community. Those community banks can have a really important role in servicing local rural small businesses that might have difficulty accessing a loan, say through a large commercial bank. But in a community bank scenario where these banks are more oriented towards a mission of serving their community, I was in a conversation with one banker who, you know, has said, you know, maybe it doesn't make the most sense on paper, but we're going to do some of these things because it's the right thing to do for our community. And so that sort of reciprocity and the goodwill that these institutions have can really make a difference. And one, for, you know, business owners and residents, but also just in a collective way for the ability to stay in a place and make it possible to be there, live day to day, and again, meet your needs regularly.
In our last few moments together, if your project does crack the secrets to what makes a rural community weak or strong, how can that information be used?
Yeah, so we hope at the end that we can have really productive educational products and information to share with communities. So, for example, can we work with a community to help them better understand themselves in terms of kind of what type of place they are and the key factors that are important for them, given their goals that, you know, that community has set for themselves? And then can we start to maybe prioritize certain institutions? Like, okay, you know, we're maybe on the verge of losing our school, and that's going to be really, really important actually for our long-term success. So let's prioritize that. Or maybe it's the bank, or maybe it's economic opportunity, which has really shifted in rural areas, particularly with regard to manufacturing and agriculture. So is this actually about jobs? So in some places, you know, thinking about institutions, others amenities, others industry, and helping people prioritize what's important. And I think take a systems approach to economic development, that we probably can't just address one thing and expect big results. That in a lot of places, it's going to be looking at a combination of factors, a system of features of the community, and understanding how they work together and thinking about strengthening the system as a whole.
Tessa, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tessa Conroy heads up the Rural Livability Project at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.